Concentrating one's
on Krishna's lotus feet, which are the reservoir of all existence. So all of existence has its source in Krishna, in his lotus feet. He is so powerful. He's unlimitedly powerful. He's inconceivably, unlimitedly powerful. So by concentrating one's meditation on your lotus feet, dear Krishna, which are the reservoir of all existence. Does everyone have that in their mind? Who can tell me what they heard? Raise your hand if you can tell me at least one part of that. Yes?
By concentrating on your lotus feet, which is the reservoir.
Which are? The reservoir. And how do they address Krishna? Do you remember? Now I'm going to tell you. And after this, as soon as I read it to you, I'm going to ask you if you remember. So the pressure is really on. O lotus-eyed Lord. So how do they address Krishna? Try it one more time. O lotus-eyed Lord, they say to him. So how do they speak to him? How do they call him? O Lord, who has eyes that are like a lotus. By concentrating, okay, now see. O lotus-eyed Lord, can you see his lotus eyes?
Yes.
And who are his lotus eyes? Who said that? You? Very good. Raise your hand if his lotus eyes are looking at you. He is pretty good, isn't he? He's looking at everyone. Vimukta, also you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Shoot me a glass.
Oh, now please listen. O lotus-eyed Lord, by concentrating one's meditation on your lotus feet, which are the reservoir of all existence, and by accepting those lotus feet as the boat by which to cross the ocean of nescience, of ignorance, by accepting Krishna's lotus feet, by accepting his shelter, by taking shelter of Krishna, one accepts those lotus feet as a boat. This is how to board the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, to accept them as the shelter. And by doing so, by remembrance of Krishna's lotus feet, which are the reservoir of all existence, one is following in the footsteps of the great saints, sages, and devotees. This is the methodology, the means by which all great devotees in the past have crossed the ocean of material existence. by focusing their attention on serving Krishna, serving his lotus feet, those feet become like a boat. And that boat has the capacity, once you board that boat of Krishna's lotus feet, to help you cross the ocean of material existence, which means ultimately a very, very fearful material existence is fearful. And this is the process that all the great devotees and saints and sages and teachers in the past have used to cross the ocean of material existence. And the verse ends in this way. By this simple process. What simple process? Raise your hands. Raise your hand. Yes? By meditating on the Lord's lotus feet and accepting his feet, his service, and by thinking of his feet, this is the boat by which we board and thereby cross the very fierce ocean of material existence. By this simple process, one can cross the ocean of nescience, the ocean of ignorance, as easily as one steps over the hoofprint of a calf. As easily as what? As easily as what? Yes, say it, someone.
One steps over the hoofprint of a calf.
Now, could you step over the Swan River even? Raise your hand if you have the capacity to step over the Swan River. No, no one. I was just checking. Only Jimmy, I think. Oh, he's raising two hands. Maybe that was in surrender. Hey, help. What to speak of the ocean? We can't step over that. But one can very easily, everyone in this room could very easily step over the hoofprint of a calf if it is filled with water. Now, how large is the hoofprint of a calf, approximately? Well, okay, it depends on the size of a calf. It's a big calf, it may be like this. It's a small calf, it may be like that. Now, easily one could step over that. So one can cross the ocean of material existence, which ultimately means destruction. And it's fearful. It's like, have any of you ever stood on the roof of a very, very tall building and sort of looked down? Have any of you had that experience? Raise your hand if you've had that experience. Where do you feel, what do you feel? Hitesh, what do you feel?
Fear.
Where do you feel it? Where do you feel it? What part of your body?
In heart, yeah.
In the heart, okay. Where else?
Yes.
And it's right here. Some terror. For a moment, terror enters the heart through the stomach. Yes? You have had that experience?
Yes.
Yes. Do you like it?
No.
No. But that terror is Krishna's chakra, which is time. Because time ultimately crushes everything, and that's the ocean of material existence. But by the simple process, and as soon as I finish this sentence, I'm going to ask you what the simple process is. One can cross this whole ocean of fear and nescience, the terror that sits in the heart. Oops, stomach. I'm afraid to talk about stomachs right now because I've been fasting all day long. By this simple process, one can cross the ocean of ignorance, of destruction, just as easily as one steps over the hoofprint of a calf. Now, what is that simple process? Raise your hand. Yes.
By meditating on the lotus feet of Krishna.
Yeah. But what does that mean in more depth? What does it mean to think about the lotus feet of Krishna? Raise your hand if you'd like to. Yes.
To understand that these lotus feet are the reservoir of all this universe?
Of all material existence, yes. Good, both good answers. What else? What else? Yes.
To commit ourselves to the service of Krishna.
To take shelter of him. That Krishna, what does it mean to take shelter of Krishna?
Surrender.
So this is a long talk in that sense. We could talk about what surrender means. But in essence, it means, Krishna, I am yours, your servant. And I take shelter of you. That means, Gotrapte Varanam, depending on Krishna. Serving him, somehow using our life's energy to serve him and accepting that he who is the reservoir of all of the material energy, just think how vast, huge, inconceivably unlimited the material nature is. Just look up, well, not right this minute, don't go outside and look up at the stars, but when you look up at the stars, it's just so vast. And if you look down at the smallest atom, it's so infinitely, ununderstandably deep. There's particles and subparticles and sub-subparticles and gluons and up quarks and down quarks. You know what a down quark is? Neither do the scientists. It's okay. It's something. It's like energy, the quantum fluctuations between things manifesting from nothing, and it's just so deep. The smallest is so deep, and the greatest is so vast. And this is just Krishna's material energy, and it's all is resting in his lotus feet. And if we can meditate upon him, which means serving him, and it means meditating and thinking about his pastimes, which he has so kindly come to this world to demonstrate, so we have something to think about instead of the stock market and the wars all over the world and this problem and that problem. If we can meditate on Krishna and his pastimes and his beauty and the fact that he has the power, that he is always looking at each and every person. Now, how does that make you feel, that Krishna is always looking at you? Raise your hand if you'd like brave enough to say how that makes you feel. Yes?
Confronting.
How does it make you feel? How do you feel? Think about that. That Krishna is watching and he knows everything that's going on. Isura Savabhutanam Riddhishay Arjunatishti. And there's no way you can hide if you want to hide. How does it make you feel? Maybe, does anyone want to say? One person volunteers confronting.
Safe.
Another person?
Loved.
Yes. See, depending upon our consciousness, the fact that Krishna is with us all the time and can see us is going to affect us differently. But if one takes shelter of him as a servant, then one will feel protected. We serve, and that allows us to feel one of Krishna's protected group. That's a good thing, yes. So this is what the demigods are saying when they're looking at little Krishna in the womb. By this simple process of taking shelter of Krishna, one can cross the ocean of ignorance, nascence, vast, just as easily as one steps over the hoofprint of a calf. Has anyone ever seen a dog swimming in the ocean? Raise your hand if you've ever seen a dog swimming in the ocean. Yes. Now just imagine trying to cross the ocean by what? Holding on to the tail of that dog. Now, would you think it's a very safe way to cross? No. So that all other methods are compared to that. This is an example. I didn't make that one up, but Prabhupada, I'm not sure where he got it from, but it's very graphic. Okay, that was the introduction to what I wanted to say. Here is what I wanted to say. In one sense, it's... Now, I want you to look at him very closely, just for a few moments, and then close your eyes and see if you can see him. You're not closing your eyes, and I'm looking. And not only am I looking, Krishna's looking. Okay, now open your eyes and look at him. Now, close your eyes and see if you can see him. Is he still looking at you? Okay, open your eyes and look at him. Now close your eyes. We can do this all night long, but we won't. But what we are going to do for a little bit longer, how much longer, do we have? Oops, we need a timekeeper. Oh, timekeeper.
10 until 12.
I like your spirit.
15 minutes on the schedule.
There's 15 minutes left?
Another 15 minutes.
Of my talk? Okay. Now, this is many years ago in 1977 in Bhuvaneswar, probably in January, Prabhupada had finished dictating and writing the up to the ninth canto, and he was just beginning the tenth canto. And when he began the tenth canto, he first did a summary of the entire tenth canto. And in the tenth canto, the summary, he's going to very briefly describe what's in each chapter. So what we're going to do is I'm going to read what he says, and then if anyone knows any other part of that pastime, they can raise the hand and they can say it. It will be clear in a moment. This is what Prabhupada writes. A short description of each chapter of this 10th canto is as follows. Which canto?
Ten.
Yes, very good. The first chapter, which chapter? You're going to really cross this ocean of material existence. The first chapter, which has 69 verses, describes Maharaj Prickett's eagerness to learn about the incarnation of Lord Krishna. And it also tells how Kamsa killed the six sons of Devaki because of his fear of being killed by her eighth child. Now, who knows something else from this first chapter? Raise your hand. Anything from this first chapter? But you have to wait. No, I'm not allowed to say that to you. Otherwise, I'll get in trouble later.
It was on the day of the wedding.
It was on the day of the wedding. What happened next?
Voice from the sky.
There's a voice from the sky.
Did you raise your hand?
Voice from the sky.
Yes, but you're supposed to wait till I call on you. Otherwise, this room has so many corners, you have no idea how many corners this room has. Okay, on the wedding day of who?
Devaki.
And?
Vasudeva
and Devaki. And who is driving the chariot? Yeah, you're very good, but wait, you should wait till I go. I'm not a real strict disciplinarian, but I can be, but I'm not. Okay, he was driving the chariot out of affection for his sister, who was cousin sister's sister, and her newly married husband, Vasudev. And suddenly, as he was driving the chariot, surrounded by trumpets, and there were horses, and there were it was just a great festival. Suddenly there was
a voice from the sky.
A voice from the sky. And what did that voice announce? Who can do it in a real proper voice in the sky mode?
I'll say, you fool.
Keep going.
I don't remember that one.
But why was Kamsa foolish? What was he doing that was so foolish? He was driving the chariot of his sister and newly married husband without understanding what?
That his child would be...
Which one, number? Seven. Almost. Very close.
Would be the killer of Kamsa.
That you don't know that the eighth child, you're driving the chariot of the husband and wife whose child is going to kill you. You're a fool. And Kamsa, immediately upon hearing this, he was driving it with so much affection, but he immediately pulled out his sword and was going to kill Devaki. His affection changed just like that. And Vasudev spoke to him and he calmed him down. He tried to preach to him. He tried to philosophically explain things to him. There's no death of the soul. But Kamsa, his mood would not change from trying to kill Devaki. Finally, Vasudev said, you have nothing to fear from Devaki because it's not she who will kill you, it's her eighth child. And I promise you that as each child is born, and we don't know if she will even give birth to children, but as each child is born, I will bring that child to you and you can do with them as you like, even kill them. Kamsa was simply, what word would you use to describe him?
Demonic.
And what word would you use to describe someone who's demonic?
Monster.
Monster, yes. I was thinking of something...
Cruel.
Cruel, yes. Another word?
Evil.
Excuse me?
Out of control.
Out of control.
Horrible.
Horrible. I was thinking of completely selfish.
Rascal.
Yes. Who said that? You. Yeah. He was completely selfish. Does that mean that someone who's completely selfish is a rascal?
I think so.
Okay. Yes, that's a, yeah. I don't want to condemn myself, so I won't say it. But but yeah, it's Ishwaraham Hambogi Siddham Balavan Sukhi means that all that's important in this world is what's good for me and what I want. That's complete selfishness, and that is a rascal, and that is demonic, and that's evil. And what were the other words used? It was horrible. They're horrible. Would you like to meet someone who was completely selfish and didn't care about anything else but what he wanted to do? No one would like to meet such a person, and Kamsa was such a person. So he didn't kill Devaki for his selfish reasons. He did the right thing for the wrong reason. And when we do the right thing, it's good. But when we do it for the wrong reason, later on there's going to be trouble. And there was trouble. That's something to do with the first chapter. In the second chapter, Prabhupada explains, it contains 42 verses. How many in the first chapter?
69.
Yes. Did you get it right? Okay, this is 42 in the second chapter. And it describes the entrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, into the womb of Devaki to fulfill his mission of killing Kamsa. When Krishna was within Devaki's womb, all the demigods, headed by Brahma, offered prayers to the Lord. And we just heard one of those prayers. Very significant. And who remembers, raise your hand for this one, who remembers what the one prayer that we just heard was? Who remembers a part of it? Yes?
About stepping over the imprint of a calf's hoof in the ground by meditating on Krishna, who is the source of all existence.
Yes, but there's some little... Thank you, very good. Some little parts missing. Yes?
Oh, lotus-eyed Lord, but just by meditating on your lotus feet, you can cross across the ocean of nations.
Yes, that's between what everyone said, yes. So that was one of their wonderful prayers. In the second chapter. And how many verses in the second chapter? The third chapter contains 53 verses. Getting up.
53.
Okay. This chapter describes the appearance of Lord Krishna as he is. The Supreme Lord comes to this world. The Lord's father and mother, understanding the Lord's appearance, offered prayers. But fearing Kamsa, the Lord's father brought the child from Mathura to Gokul Vrindavan. Gokul. There. And there's the little boy. Now here's a question for you. Why did Vasudev, the Lord's father, bring the boy to Gokul, cross the Yamuna? Why?
Fear.
Fear of? But yet, they knew he was the Supreme Lord. So why was he afraid?
It's his child.
So he had both concepts, Vasudev had both concepts, ideas in his mind. That Krishna was the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, and yet he's my child. So actually, it's when Krishna killed Kamsa, when Krishna went to Vasudeva and Devaki, they saw him and they knew, they had both concepts in their mind. He was the Supreme Lord and he was their child, and they didn't know whether to bow down or to embrace him. And then Krishna, wanting their affection. Actually, it describes by our acharyas that they became stunned in between these two conflicting emotions. They didn't move. He didn't bow down, and they didn't embrace him. And then Krishna covered them, or Yogamaya covered them, so they only saw Krishna as their son. And then what did they do? What did they do? They embraced. The fifth chapter contains 32 verses, and it describes how Nanda Maharaj performed the birth ceremony of Krishna and then went to Mathura, where he met Vasudev. Does anyone know why he went to Mathura? Does anyone know? Raise your hand if you know. Yes.
To
pay taxes to Kamsa. Now, consider this. This most beautiful, beautiful child was born. And as soon as he was born, Nanda Maharaj decided to go to Mathura to pay his taxes. First of all, how many of you are so eager to pay your taxes as that? Probably no one. Second of all, except Raj Mohan and his Brahmin boy. But why did he choose that time to do it? When Krishna was just there, just born, like the day after, 2 days after. Why did he choose that time? Does anyone know? Do you know? Would you like to know? What's the question?
Why go that time? Why choose that time?
Why did he choose that time?
To pay taxes.
Do you know the answer?
To keep his word.
Do you know the answer?
He was worried about
Kamsa. That if Kamsa came to collect the taxes, he would see this beautiful boy, Krishna. And who knows what Kamsa would do, because he was so selfish. He might kill him. So before not wanting to take any chance, Nanda Maharaj went to Mathura to pay the taxes to stop Kamsa from getting any idea that this beautiful child was born and then he would come. The sixth chapter contains 44 verses. Now that's easy to remember. How many verses does the sixth chapter contain? 44. Isn't that easy to remember? Yeah? Is it? Is it hard to remember? It's hard to keep remembering it. But because 6 and 4 is, and then you add 4 more, so 44, 6 chapter 44, and then what do you get? 16 or 14? 14. And then you add the 1 and the 4 together and you get 5. And that's how old Jeevi was last year, so it's easy to remember. Okay, how many verses are there in the sixth chapter? Everyone remembers that, right? How many? How many? In this chapter, Nanda Maharaj, following the advice of his friend Vasudeva, returns to Gokul, and on the way, he sees the dead body of the Putana demoness and is astonished at her having been killed by this little baby whose name was Krishna. Oh, Chokidar! Kya karo?
Yeah, perfect timing.
Yes. What do we do now?
The prayer.
Can you, I pray that you will tell me the voice from the sky. Oh, if I would have only known you were there at the right time.
We're going to invite people to spend a few minutes to write something from the heart.
Yes.
As their little offering to Gopinath.
What should they write it on?
They will be supplied.
And they shall sit right here?
Wherever they like. But it'll probably be quieter here. Let's see if you need to stretch your legs.
And then write a prayer to Gopinath. And then what should they do with that prayer after they write it?
You can put it on the altar as an offering.
Okay.
See if you can make it as deep and heartfelt as you can.
And there are some stickers and other things so you can decorate your card nicely for Gopinath.
Okay, how are we going to, what's the interface between the people and the implements?
The implements are being passed out.
Yeah, but we don't want the people to pass out.
Just unless they want to.
Unless you want.
Scissors,
there. You can see what stickers you like.
And how long do we have for this?
15 minutes.
15 minutes.
And after
that? IST?
You can take a card and an envelope and a pen and something to decorate with.
I think we should have a few.
You want an envelope?
Yeah. Who needs cards? Who needs envelopes? Who needs pens? Who needs... Just raise your hand if you need something.
Cards? Anyone need a card still?
Thank you.